President Biden's new plan to release more oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve comes as many Americans are concerned about rising energy costs and inflation. But this isn't the first time we've confronted this. In the 1970s, inflation hit double digits, oil prices spiked, and Americans lined up for hours to fuel up their cars.
I've been here since 4:30 this morning. It's ridiculous waiting online here. I couldn't get gas Tuesday. The line was about 8 blocks long. It was ridiculous.
That's from the PBS NewsHour in 1979. To look back at this period, Here and Now's Scott Tong spoke with Meg Jacobs, history professor at the Princeton School of Public and International Affairs. She's author of Panic at the Pump, The Energy Crisis and the Transformation of American Politics in the 1970s.
Meg Jacobs, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with energy prices. The story, to some degree, starts in 1973. The U.S. supported Israel in the Yom Kippur War. And then Arab producers from the OPEC group retaliated. What did they do, and what did it do to energy prices?
Well, they initiated what became known as the Arab embargo. And essentially, what they did is not only embargoed shipments to the United States, but they also cut their production to increase prices. And for sure, prices did go up.
And that obviously played out in the United States. Long lines at the gas station. The U.S. government responded with a 55-mile-per-hour national limit to try to preserve energy. It helped inflation go up to 11% in 1974. What did that look like in America on Main Street as far as inflation?
It looked like chaos. Many experienced this as a complete shock. Very few Americans knew that we imported any oil at all, and their entire experience, lives, had been dominated by cheap and abundant fuel. Americans felt anxious, and I think the word panic is the right word, about whether or not they would be able to tank up at their local gas stations.
Yeah. The government was really struggling to tackle overall inflation, energy prices, and other prices in the economy. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to a scholar about the actions by the Federal Reserve. But in your book, you also write about price controls that President Nixon imposed. What did he do, and did it work?
It's really interesting, the history of Richard Nixon and price controls. Richard Nixon first came into office in 1946 at the end of World War II, in which he ran as a Republican against World War II-era price controls as being unduly restrictive. And yet once he was in the Oval Office, he did not hesitate to use price controls. Initially, it's across the board. It's actually an incredibly popular thing. And then there's a sort of easing up. And then that's when the problems begin, because it's one thing to sort of impose price controls. It's a very different and more problematic thing to then extricate the country from a set of controls without sort of leading to sort of spurts when the controls come off.
If they were popular for a while, why did he change course?
Well, I would say this is one of the complexities. Price controls are have backing at the popular level, but less so at the policy level. The business community, many within his own party, not sympathetic to the use of price controls. So Nixon was really conflicted about whether or not to deploy this kind of populist tool.
Yeah. And in the end, what happened to inflation? I mean, was President Nixon able to tamp it down or no?
No. And inflation, as we know, comes to define the decade. It remains high even after the Arab embargo is lifted, and then it's magnified in a second oil shock in the summer of 1979 when Jimmy Carter is in office. And by the end of Jimmy Carter's presidency, inflation is now in the double digits, and this is when there's an abandonment of price controls as an accepted policy tool and instead a preference for raising interest rates by the Federal Reserve.
Meg Jacobs is professor of history at the Princeton School of Public and International Affairs. Meg Jacobs, thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me.
And we want to look now at what the Federal Reserve did to respond to high inflation back in the 1970s and 80s. Arthur Burns was the chair of the Fed between 1970 and 1978. And after that, someone you may have heard about, Paul Volcker. So how did the Fed, under both men, try to fight inflation, and what happened? Let's bring in William Silber. He's professor of finance and economics at the Stern School of Business at NYU. And his book is Volcker, The Triumph of Persistence. Bill Silber, welcome.
Thank you very much, Scott. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Nice to have you. So can we start with Arthur Burns? You wrote in the Wall Street Journal recently that he took some actions, raising a key interest rate to more than 12% by 1974. But it actually didn't solve the issue. Why not?
Well, you see, it was the first year where we had double-digit inflation. Arthur Burns was the chairman of the Federal Reserve. He jumped interest rates from about 6% to 12%.
Wow.
And in fact, inflation came down. But there was a jump in unemployment. And he immediately lowered interest rates. And all the gains of fighting inflation disappeared. Mm. Inflation was on the run.
Yeah. And for the rest of us, can you remind us about the relationship? When interest rates go high, why do a lot of people lose their jobs?
Well, it's very difficult for companies to borrow money. It's very difficult for people to borrow money and spend. You don't want to spend 12% on a car loan. And when you stop buying, companies stop making money, and therefore they don't hire and fire some of their staff.
Okay. So after Arthur Burns, there was briefly in the chair, George William Miller, and then President Carter nominates Paul Volcker. And he raises interest rates dramatically. What kind of economic pain did that inflict? Late 70s.
Well, it was actually in October of 1979, where the Fed introduced much, much tighter money to the tune of 20% interest rates. It's unbelievable.
Unimaginable, 20%.
Yes, and that certainly got people's attention. They stopped borrowing, they stopped buying, and Paul Volcker would get 2x4s, the ones that we build rooms with.
Yeah.
He got 2x4s in the mail, which said, you know, stop this destructive impact. And Volcker understood people's pain. He came from a very, very modest family, but he also understood that the country had become sick and tired of inflation.
Well, we have a piece of tape on this. In 1981, Paul Volcker goes on the PBS McNeil-Lehrer Report, my old employer, and he was asked if he had any second thoughts about raising interest rates. And here's what he said.
No, I don't think at all. There is some difficulty, some pain out there in sectors of the economy. It's very well known in the housing area, in the automobile area. Small businesses sometimes are particularly vulnerable.
But of course, he did stay the course. And in the end, did inflation come down?
It certainly did. So when you had inflation of 12%, in 1982, by 1984, it was down to between 3 and 4%. That is a huge collapse in inflation. It wasn't enough for him, but it was a huge collapse, much faster than anyone would have imagined.
So today, the Fed chair, Jay Powell, is hearing a minor version of the same criticism that Paul Volcker faced. Should we draw the lesson from the Volcker era of the Fed? That is, if you're going to try to break the back of inflation, you have to keep at it, despite how painful it is? Or is today's situation different from then?
Well, you know, I think Powell has already admitted that he has learned a lesson from history. And the lesson from history, I think that he was referring to was Arthur Burns's failure to keep interest rates high enough, long enough. And I hope that Jerome Powell has learned that history, and he needs one physical appendage in order to stay the course, and that is backbone.
But, you know, I mean, as economists say, if you've seen one recession, you've seen one recession. They're different. As far as inflation, is this inflation the same kind of inflation as we saw back in the 70s and 80s? Or has it come from a different place and therefore the response might be a different one?
Well, that's a good question. And in point of fact, 1974, the inflation was called transitory. That is the word. So the same kind of second thoughts about fighting inflation that Arthur Burns lost, I think Jerome Powell has finally got the lesson.
William Silber is professor of finance and economics at the Stern School of Business at NYU. Bill Silber, thanks so much for the time. Nice to talk to you.
It's a pleasure being with you, Scott.